Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and I've got a great show for you today. In fact, I want to thank you all for downloading what is going to be episode number 50 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. And as I said, I've got a great show for you for episode 50, but I do want to go over a couple of things. First of all, I want to thank all of you, my listeners, my readers, my clients, for making the Tailwind Coaching Podcast what it is. And it pays to reiterate what it is. Tailwind Coaching Podcast is simply a platform for me to disseminate free information to you, everyday, run-of-the-mill Joe Sixpack cyclists, the guys who go to work every morning. They have to be in at 9 o'clock, and they leave at 5 o'clock at night. But after they leave, they put down their, they take off their tie, they take off their suit jacket and their wingtips, and they just become another guy on a bike, another bike racer, another Fondo rider, another guy who's just out to get fit, to lose a little bit of that middle age pudge, and just go out and have a good time. And it's very amazing that after almost 2 years and 50 podcasts, this will be number 50, that I've grown an audience as big as it is, closing in on 75,000 hits, individual hits, not redownloads, 75,000 unique individual hits on this podcast. That's a lot of hits, folks. That's a great milestone. I like to think that I try every podcast episode to provide you something different, something unique, something valuable. I try to provide information that not only will you listen to in your car or through your earbuds while you're working out at the gym or on the trainer, or indeed just sitting in your office, I try to provide you something that you can take home at the end of that 9-to-5 shift and you can put to practice. You can put paid to your own skills on the road. Make something happen. Make yourself a little bit better using some of the tips and tricks that I've provided for you over the last couple of years. I also want to thank those of you who have gone to iTunes and have voted the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, up the ratings, allowing me to reach more and more and more people and get more and more information out to people. As I have said multiple times, I don't charge for the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I do this as a free adjunct to tailwind-coaching.com, my website. And I do it because as a cyclist first, as a coach second, I really just enjoy watching people love riding their bike. And I've seen it countless times, in person, via email, in feedback, you know, in Facebook messages. When people ride stronger, when people ride faster, when people can hit that treasured goal that they set at the beginning of the season, even if it's without, you know, paid help from me, even if it's just the tips that you earn from this podcast, that's the greatest feeling in the world, that I have been actually able to help somebody out, to help them reach their goal, to help them improve themselves in some way or another. That's the ultimate, folks, and that's why I do the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. That's why I do it for free. Of course, I always ask that you visit my sponsors if you're so inclined. They do throw a few dollars my way when you do visit them, but I'll get to that in a second. And of course, I ask that you head over to iTunes. There's a link in the podcast on tailwind-coaching.com in this clip or in this show notes. And just rate that up so I can reach a few more people. Every person that I can reach and every person that I can help out and help them become a better cyclist, a better person, a fitter person, live a better, healthier life, that's a win in my book. That's exactly what I'm out to do, and that's exactly why I love doing what I do. So, after 50 podcasts, I just want to thank every single one of you who's listening, every single one of you who's downloading. And if you have recommendations for me for the next 50 podcasts, please submit them to me, coachrobdc@gmail.com. I would love to get a podcast co-host so that I can discuss not just training techniques and fitness techniques and nutrition, but so that I can discuss the happenings in the pro cycling world, the local racing scene, and just discuss and riff on cycling as a culture. That's what I would love to see in the next 50 podcasts. So if you're interested in joining that and you think you might be good at it, go ahead, shoot me an email, and let's talk. But from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank every single one of you for downloading and listening and for all the comments that you've made and all the comments that you've sent me and all the feedback you've given me. So here's looking forward to another 50 podcasts, another 2 years of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. And that being said, let me get into my usual shtick. I'm going to try and make it as quick as I possibly can. I said welcome. It was an extended welcome. It's about 6 minutes or so. I also want to say, go ahead and visit my sponsors. I just mentioned that. Road ID, they've been with me for a long time. If for some reason the unthinkable happens and they need to identify your carcass out in a ditch, make sure you're wearing a Road ID. They're cheap, they're effective, and emergency personnel are trained to look for them. Head on over. At the top of my website, you'll see a link that says sponsors. Click on that link that says sponsors, and you can head on over to the Road ID website. Go ahead, pick that up. It's a great Valentine's Day gift for somebody that you care about. The Sufferfest. Sounds weird that I would be promoting training videos, but I absolutely love these things. I do follow my own workouts, but some days I just don't feel like it, and I want to watch some other people suffer as well. The Sufferfest utilizes licensed footage from UCI races along with very, very well-designed workouts to give you an unparalleled training experience. Head on over to the Sufferfest through the banner links that I've got on my website up in the upper right-hand corner and pick up some of those workouts. They've just released 9 hammers. All 9 of them suck, I will say that. They also have just released Angels 2015 with some updated footage of the old climbing classic Angels. Head on over there, give those a look. Other affiliates that I do participate with, U.S. Wellness Meats for hormone-free, grass-fed, high-protein snacks and good-quality meats. The Bulletproof Exec, which has some interesting nutritional bits and supplements that you can use to improve your fitness and your health in general. And, of course, my recommended Amazon store, which will have some of the information that I'm talking about today or some of the products I'm going to talk about today, and also a few of the things that I recommend personally. Again, I always advocate shopping at your local bike shop for bike gear and clothing and stuff like that, but sometimes when they just don't have it, Amazon's a great place to go. And of course, if you click through the link, they will throw me a small pittance for referring you across there. Visiting the site, the episode show notes receptacle, the blog, and of course, past editions of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast are at tailwind-coaching.com. On the website, you can find ways to contact me in the upper right-hand corner. There is a Follow Coach Rob panel that'll have links for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Strava, and of course, email at coachrobdc@gmail.com. As I said earlier on, I would highly, highly, highly appreciate it if you head on over to the website, tailwind-coaching.com, click the link in this episode show notes for the Tailwind Coaching Podcast on iTunes, rate it 5 stars. Again, it helps me reach more and more people. And as for tailwind-coaching.com. Of course, that is where my online store is. Downloadable training plans are indeed available. I encourage you, if you're not looking at training plans for the 2015 season, whether it's a Grand Fondo, whether it's a Century, whether it is criterium racing or road racing, check out my modular training plans. My raw strength module is indeed available. I've been getting some good feedback on that. It's a very, very tough 8 weeks of training, and be prepared for some really, really tough lifting in that. Does require a gym access or at least a significant weight room at home. But it's a really, really great modular plan to accompany either my base plan or my new advanced base plan. My advanced base plan, the advanced base module, will basically try to adapt you to different positions on the bike, have you utilizing different muscle groups, and really working to put the screws to your neuromuscular system so that you can build some efficiency into your pedal stroke. A lot tougher than my original base plan. Really only recommend this one for people who are considered to be advanced cyclists or maybe intermediate cyclists. If you've done my base plan and you're able to complete that with no problem, check out the advanced base plan for this year. You'll be pleasantly surprised. Training plan support. If you've ever wanted to get coaching, if you've ever wanted to be coached by yours truly, or if you've ever wanted to be held accountable by a coach, but you really don't want to afford the exorbitant rates, my training plan support is designed to offer individual one-on-one coaching to anybody who purchases my pre-built training plans. So, for example, if you purchase my modular training plans, for example, my advanced base plan for 12 weeks, the build module for 8 weeks, and the peak module for 2 weeks, that's 22 weeks of training, you could feasibly purchase training plan support for that 20 weeks or 22 weeks for, let's see, around $150. Compare that to about $100 a month for traditional one-on-one coaching where I develop a training plan for you. That's a freaking steal, folks. That's a great deal. So if you're interested in that training plan support, shoot me an email or pick it up on the website and pick it up alongside your training plans and get a little bit of extra out of that. The details are on the website, but in short, it'll give you access to me, my brain, and essentially help you out when you get into a bit of a bind or you're curious as to what you should do next. It'll be the key for how you get that done. I have one one-on-one training spot available for the coming months. If you're interested in that, shoot me an email, coachrobdc@gmail.com, or request a consult. If you're looking for a consult, again, email me and we'll talk. And of course, those of you who are longtime listeners of the podcast or new listeners, welcome to the podcast. You can always take 10% off of anything in my downloadable training plan store, anything in my online store, by using the discount code PODCAST10, PODCAST10, at checkout. That'll knock 10% off. Those of you who are doing bat and kill, I've gotten a couple questions on this. You should be in the middle of week 7 at this point. I'm recording right now on Thursday, January 15th. This is week 7. Week 8, actually, will be coming up January 19th. Okay, so if there was any question as to what week you should be in, you should be in week 7, coming up on week 8. Thus far, after 4 weeks, I have seen an average of about 4% FTP gain from people who are doing that plan. So that's great job out there, folks. You guys are well on the way. Looking forward to seeing what you look like after another 4 weeks and once you start getting into the build phase of that plan. So, that is all done. All my thank yous, all my heartfelt congratulations and sincerity and all that stuff poured out, all my usual stuff poured out. Let's get into the meat and potatoes of today's show. And that's going to be recovery. How to recover like a pro. And we're going to cover a couple of different things here. We're going to talk about the importance of recovery, the concept of recovery, and I'm going to go through a couple of the little tips and secrets that I use to recover. And this will be the first time a lot of you guys are going to be hearing this. So stay tuned. It's going to be a really, really awesome podcast. Okay, here we go. Talking about recovery. What is the importance of recovery? Well, Recovery is actually, if you look physiologically at the body, recovery is how our body improves itself. Now, that seems very counterproductive in the fact that we are really always told that, well, if you want to get better, you got to train harder. If you want to get better, you have to train harder. And that is true to an extent. The main problem with that concept is that it pays no mind to the idea of recovery. The main reason why we need to pay attention to recovery: our bodies are essentially built to be self-correcting creatures. All right. Physiologically, our body is designed to adapt to stimulus so that the next time we are asked to perform against a said stimulus, we are able to do it better than we did before. Okay. Essentially, if we put a tax on our body systems, whether it's our aerobic system, our anaerobic system, if it's our muscular system, if it's our mental capacity, if it's our lung capacity, if it's our flexibility, if we put some kind of tax on our body systems, our body essentially says, man, I had a hard time doing this. I need to upgrade this so I don't have to work as hard next time, so I will be able to succeed more the next time I'm called upon to do this. Now, granted, this steps into the realm of considering that if you are going to tax your body, you have to do it in such a way that you basically leave your comfort zone. You have to be able to become uncomfortable, all right? Because if you're comfortable, your body is happy and it's able to perform to a standard at which it is happy. If your body is uncomfortable and unable to maintain an effort or is called upon to do something that's beyond its capacity, that's what drives our body to adapt and change. All right. The primal concern here typically says that, or the primary concern, I should say, is that we have to upgrade our body so that we can continue to survive. Now, I use primal and primary interchangeably, and that sort of works if you kind of look at this from a evolutionary anthropological standpoint. The problem with that is it's sort of the primal excuse is sort of an out-of-date explanation. Survival today typically is meeting a deadline or, getting to work on time, dealing with an emotional stress, bullying, things like that, whatever, what have you. That is a very different kind of stimulus than we are used to. But for the purposes of the podcast and for discussion about recovery, we're going to discuss physical stresses in terms of exercise and in terms of additional stress volume that we put on our bodies for either fun, profit, or just because we routinely want to look cool wearing stretchy pants and stretchy jerseys and dumb flat-footed shoes while we ride a bike that probably costs more than most people's cars. But anyway, the whole point here is, and one of the important things, points of recovery, which I will gloss over real quickly, is that in a modern type society like we have now, one of the ways to improve your recovery is to minimize additional stresses on your body. That includes minimizing emotional stresses, psychological stresses, anxieties, things like that. All of those things are additional stressors on the body, which your body has to recover from. And adding exercise or fitness or training on top of that is very, very difficult to do. But anyway, the point remains, we can only essentially upgrade our body. We can only build up our body during recovery. Exercise, by definition, by physiological definition, exercise is a catabolic experience. All right, we have to break down substrates. We have to break down sugars. We have to break down fats. We have to break down proteins. We have to use enzymes. We have to use up energy stores and fuel stores. We have to use ATP, which is the cellular energy currency. I'll put a link to a post which has become kind of big on my website lately, which is biohacking your energy systems. And I got to make a note, otherwise I'm going to forget to put it in the podcast show notes. That will explain the concept of ATP and ATP as a energy substrate. But essentially, exercise being a catabolic state, we have to use things up in order to perform it. Recovery is an anabolic state. Now, most of you know the word anabolic by hearing about anabolic hormones or anabolic steroids, things like testosterone, human growth hormone, IGF-1, things like that. Anabolic hormones are hormones which build up the body, i.e. you see somebody take testosterone, especially in higher doses, they become significantly more muscular, put on some significant mass, etc., etc. That's what anabolic processes do. They rebuild or they build. and that is what recovery is. Recovery is an anabolic process. During recovery, muscle damage heals, whether it's muscle damage from strength training, from lifting weights, from lifting a refrigerator up the stairs, from riding 75 miles, from racing for 40 minutes flat out. During recovery, that muscle damage, the micro tears in those muscles will heal. Any of the damaged cellular machinery or organelles will be destroyed. Damaged DNA will be destroyed. Hormone depletion is typically restored. Hormone balance is restored, even more importantly. Endurance exercise of any kind really creates a spike in cortisol, with cortisol being the one of the fight or flight hormones, along with epinephrine or norepinephrine, trying to get your body prepared to burn fuel and get away from something. And just a side note that cortisol is also highly, highly invoked in emotional stressors. So again, very important to get rid of emotional stress and other kind of anxiety in your life as well. But hormone balance is typically restored. Glycogen is forced immediately back into muscle cells, or glucose, I should say, is forced into muscle cells so that it can become glycogen. Intramuscular triglycerides are typically replenished. Aerobic enzymes typically are replenished and often increase in anticipation of a similar aerobic event in the future. Capillary density typically increases in the muscle. Very often you have increases in red blood cell count, volume, hemoglobin count and volume, or hemoglobin volume, I should say. very often a small spike in reticulocytes if you really want to get very technical and start charging down the path of focusing on blood parameters. But essentially the whole point here, you see the pattern that is arising here, and that is that essentially, when you recover from exercise, your body heals itself up. You've just done some damage to it by riding, racing, lifting, etc., etc. Your body is trying very, very hard to heal itself up. So if recovery is so important, how do we go about recovery? Well, I'm going to start with a couple of the most typically and most often used recovery techniques. One of the most common ones that I've seen people advocate, and of course one of the ones that is almost always done incorrectly, or almost always performed incorrectly, is the recovery ride. This is the case where you go out on Sunday with the local A-group riders, and you just throw down. You go out there with the expressed goal of kicking ass. And you go out there and you kick ass, and you come home and you're hurting and you're sore and you're tired. And maybe you do one of the things I'm going to mention next portion here, but or maybe you don't. You wake up the next morning and go, God damn, my legs really, really freaking hurt. They're really tired. You know what I need to do? I need to go out and I need to do a recovery ride. And you go out for that recovery ride and you ride for maybe 20 minutes, and then your legs start to loosen up and you start to go, hey man, I feel pretty good. I'm gonna just ramp it up a little bit. Wrong, bad idea. I can't tell you how many times, and I'm guilty of doing it myself. It happens all the time. I go out saying, I'm just going to take it easy. I'm just going to let the legs spin. I'm going to recover. And before you know it, you've thrown that thing into the big ring and you're hitting the drops and you're plowing along. And what happened to my recovery ride, man? This isn't recovery. Exactly. Recovery rides are almost always done way too hard. In most of the athlete files that I review, recovery rides are just done way too hard. You don't need to be doing recovery rides that are that hard. Most recovery rides should have an intensity factor of like 0.6 or below. An average power output of less than 55% of your functional threshold. Okay. Honestly, as a coach personally, what would I recommend? I would tell you, if you're considering going out for a recovery ride, go out for a walk instead. That's probably going to be more the speed you need to get your legs to recover, to flush out some of the metabolic waste, to get some fresh blood into those legs, to get some fresh nutrition into those legs, et cetera, et cetera. All right. That is my number one tip. If you're going to recover, do not do a recovery ride per se. If you need to get on the bike that badly, do it on a trainer. All right. And let me tell you, basically, if I'm telling you to get on a trainer, most of you are not going to do recovery rides because most of you hate the trainer. And I completely commiserate with you that the trainer is just a hellspawned beast of evil that is unfortunately a necessity this time of year in the most of the United States, as it seems. But anyway, recovery rides, nix them, go for a walk instead. You're probably much better off doing that. Other techniques, as opposed to other physical techniques, similar to recovery rides. The ice bath has become a very popular technique lately, and the concept behind an ice bath is it reduces acute inflammation. Granted, inflammation from a physiological standpoint is how your body heals. However, excessive inflammation can cause pain, stiffness, swelling, etc., etc. An ice bath is designed to sort of blunt that inflammatory response a little bit so that you get enough inflammation to recover, for your body to actually physiologically recover. However, you're not in all sorts of misery. Ice baths work not only by reducing the inflammatory response a little bit, they also dull your unmyelinated nerve fibers, which are type C fibers for the record. The ice actually acts on those nerve endings themselves to slow their impulses and reduce pain. So if you have a particularly rough race, for example, an ice bath may be a potentially good thing for you. Another popular one right now, compression gear seems to be one of the most popular things out there. Compression gear acts as a second very thin layer of musculature. Your body is designed in the legs particularly. That movement of the leg muscles compresses the veins and actually assists with venous return towards the central circulatory system, the heart, etc., etc. Heart and the liver particularly, which will help filter some of the toxins out of the body. Interestingly enough, this is why walking is such good recovery. It pushes some of the pooled blood out of the legs. It allows fresh, oxygenated, highly nutrient-rich blood to get into those extremities and sort of help that recovery process a little bit. The compression gear acts like a small, very thin, extra muscular layer. It helps to push some of that metabolic waste, that old blood, for example, or so to speak, some of that lymph fluid as well, out of the extremity and back into the circulatory system. Whether or not compression gear works appears to be a bit of a point of debate right now. There's plenty of research on both sides of the coin that says, yes, it does, no, it doesn't. Whether it works or not for you, that's not for me to say. However, I will say that anecdotally, I, myself, and many people feel better wearing recovery compression gear or recovery compression gear, even during working hours or immediately after a race or what have you. So that is essentially an N equals one experiment for all of you out there. Along the lines of compression gear, the professionals seem to utilize massage therapy quite a bit. Most people, unless you are a professional, do not have a massage therapist handy. I'm extremely fortunate in the fact that I do have one that lives in the same house that I do, who is in fact my wife. That is an excellent, excellent thing. However, I don't take advantage of it as often as I should. However, the next best thing, which I do take advantage of in some capacity, is a foam roller. Again, a massage is very much like a compression tight or a compression sleeve. It's designed to loosen up the muscles, move some of the waste products out, bring some fresh blood in. And that's exactly what a massage does. It's exactly what compression gear does. And that's exactly what a foam roller can do. The one caveat of a foam roller is you have to be careful to not do it too hard. Otherwise, you will risk doing a little more damage to muscles, particularly muscles that don't need to be rolled. That is a completely another topic in and of itself, which I'm hoping to get to sometime in this off season. So keep a watch for that, by the way. And of course, the other common recovery theme is put your feet up. And of course, complete rest is not necessarily a bad thing. But again, we've discussed the concept of recovery rides and how walking is such a good thing for you. So feet up may not be the best thing for you anymore. One thing I want to take a moment to comment on here as well, along with these very physical active type recovery modes, what are the absolute most important things that you need to do for recovery, and this cannot be stressed enough, is to get adequate and proper sleep. Okay? Sleep is essentially the time in which your body recovers and rebuilds. It's the time which everything basically cools down, calms down. Your body does not have to worry about being alert, does not have to worry about being chased by something, taking out the garbage, paying the bills, etc., etc. Okay? Sleep is when your body learns to release growth hormone, learns to rebuild protein synthesis or restart protein synthesis. It learns to rebuild musculature. It learns to add new musculature, new muscle tissue, new organelles, new mitochondria, etc., etc. Okay, so that is a time, a very, very, very important time. It's also a time when your brain gets to recover a little bit. Your brain gets to sort of re-energize a little bit. This is why sleep is so, so, so important. All right, because if your brain is tired, it's been proven in multiple studies, if your central nervous system is fatigued, the rest of your body will fatigue shortly thereafter. So this is why, even if you're mentally tired, very often being physically tired follows that. All right. And it stands to say that the more efforts you're making, the harder your efforts, the more sleep you need. This really comes into play when you've got a really solid jam-packed training schedule or a racing schedule. For example, if you're racing a series of races, like a six-day type event, if you're doing a stage race, you need more sleep than if you're simply going to work. Of course, unless you are a construction foreman or a construction guy and you're slinging steel and lumber all day. For those of you who are office jockeys or desk jockeys, you will need a lot more sleep if you're going to do a three-day stage race than if you were simply going to work for 3 days. All right. So make your sleep a priority and make it proportional to the time that you are training. All right. So some of the physical recovery bits, some of the issues with recovery rides, and of course the note on sleep aside, I'm going to get into little bit of the stuff that most of you have not heard yet, and this is the nutritional side of recovery and a couple of things you can do to really, really, really help and boost your recovery with a couple of really simple nutritional tools. Okay, nutritional recovery. What is the number one aspect of nutrition that I'm going to discuss as being important for recovery. That's going to be very simple. It's going to be a balanced whole food nutritional approach. If you've been following any of my blog posts, any of my podcasts, my Facebook discussions, etc., you will know that my advocacy is towards a higher fat, low glycemic index carbohydrate diet. Let me rephrase that. A high fat diet, approximately 50% calories from fat, particularly saturated fats and monounsaturated fats. I try to avoid poly and polyunsaturated stuff as well, where possible, or in limitation. Carbohydrates, around 100 to 150 grams of low glycemic index carbohydrates, particularly timed for post-workout consumption, so that none of that glucose that's broken down from those carbs goes into fat stores. And the balance in protein, anywhere between 0.6 grams to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, depending on the amount of muscular damage you are doing. So, for example, if I'm doing a day where I have a heavy weightlifting workout planned, I'm going to be shooting for closer to that 100 grams or 1 gram per pound of body weight in terms of protein to ensure that I am getting adequate protein to sustain muscle growth and muscle synthesis. So that's my concept of nutrition. Of course, for carbohydrates, I avoid anything that's processed, white flour, white sugar, anything like that. Again, if you're going to cheat and have a small piece of chocolate or a piece of bread, it's not the end of the world unless you are allergic to something in either one of those, but I tend to avoid grains where possible. It's very much a primal-esque diet. However, it's a primal-esque diet that balances significant fat consumption as well. anyway, the point here is eat properly for the amount of activity you are performing. If you are doing a lot of exercise, if you're doing a gym day and you're spending an hour lifting and then you're spending 2 hours riding, consider upping your carbohydrate intake because you're probably going to need to replace those carbs. If you're doing a very light day, you're sitting at the desk in the office, you're not training today, consider limiting those carbs a little bit. Consider increasing protein, increasing your carb intake from vegetables, dark green leafy vegetables, broccolis, things like that, things that have a high nutrient density. All right, try to avoid empty calories wherever possible. And of course, if it doesn't have nutrient value, ask yourself, why am I eating this? If you can honestly say, I'm eating it just because I really want to, okay, that's okay. If eating that piece of chocolate really brings you that much happiness, then eat that piece of chocolate. But it's almost always better to ask, is there something better that I could be eating? And almost always the answer is yes. And that's the kind of balanced whole food nutritional recovery I am discussing and I'm talking about here. Now, aside from balanced whole food nutrition, there are a couple of excellent supplemental routes which I have tested over a couple of years. And there is also some research out there to show that they may be valuable. There are, of course, also physiological mechanisms by which these recovery techniques will work. And I want to preface this by saying that all of the recovery supplements that I'm talking about here are available in my Tailwind Coaching Amazon store. Whether it's the D-ribose that I'm about to discuss, whether it's the magnesium oil, the zinc, whether it's the creatine, it's all available in my Amazon store. So go ahead and take a look at my sponsor list up there. You can click through and you can find those in the Amazon store. And that will be, again, it'll throw a few pennies my way for bandwidth and hosting costs. And you'll be able to find this stuff very easily, especially the kind that I recommend. And with no further ado, let's get into that. And D-ribose is going to be the first supplement that we're going to discuss. D-ribose is actually a pentose, a 5-carbon sugar. And it is a 5-carbon sugar that is naturally produced in the body. It's produced naturally in the body through a chemical process called the pentose phosphate shunt. And why D-ribose is so cool and why it works so well is it's easily converted into a molecule called PRPP, which is phosphoribosylpyrophosphate. Try saying that 3 times fast. Okay, maybe that's what I'm going to use for my co-host tryouts. If you can, number one, if you can read my show notes, which are just horrendous, and if you can pronounce half of the things that I'm discussing, then you probably get the job. But phosphoribosylpyrophosphate is a key component in the salvaging and scavenging of the total adenine nucleotide pool. That's a whole lot of Greek to most of you, okay? Basically, this 5-carbon sugar, which is different from glucose. Glucose is a 6-carbon sugar. So think of a hexagon shape versus a pentagon shape. Those are treated very, very differently in the body. That's the number one thing for you guys to remember here, that we're not talking about glucose. This is not a glucose-like molecule. But it is converted to this... basically a phosphate molecule, and it enters and it's used to scavenge something called the adenine nucleotide pool. Now, you'll remember if you took a look at the link in my episode show notes for biohacking your energy systems and a couple of my other podcasts, we talked about the concept that ATP is cellular energy currency. ATP is essentially several phosphate molecules attached to a backbone, and that's happens to be a 5-carbon sugar backbone. And the adenine nucleotide pool is basically little pieces of ATP which have been broken off or recycled or whatever. Essentially, what happens here, a glucose 6-phosphate, the PRPP comes about via a glucose 6-phosphate molecule becomes a 6-phosphogluconolactate, and that is via a glucose 6-phosphodehydrogenase enzyme. All right, this is the pentose phosphate shunt, folks. That is a rate limiting step. That G6P dehydrogenase is a rate limiting step. That 6-phosphogluconolactate to 6-phosphogluconate via gluconolactonase, you take 6-phosphogluconate to ribose 5-phosphate via the 6-phosphogluconate dehydrogenase enzyme, which is a rate-limiting step, ribose 5-phosphate to phosphoribosyl pyrophosphate via the ribose phosphate diphosphokinase. So that's how we get PRPP from D-ribose. Now, most of you are going to be going, what the hell? What is the point of that? I don't understand that. That doesn't make any freaking sense. And let me back up there for a minute. I misspoke for a second there. The pentose phosphate shunt basically creates PRPP, phosphoribosylpyrophosphate, from various substrates, particularly some varieties of sugars. And it goes through that process that I just said, G6P to 6-PGL via G6P dehydrogenase, which is rate-limiting, 6-phosphogluconolactate, 6-phosphogluconate via gluconolactonase, 6-phosphogluconate to ribose 5-phosphate via 6-phosphogluconate dehydrogenase, which is rate-limiting step, ribose 5-phosphate to phosphoribosylpyrophosphate via ribose phosphate diphosphokinase. Okay. If you go back and look, or if you draw this out, and I will, in fact, what I will do to you, for you folks right now, is I'm going to take this this little bit, and I'm actually recording, I'm actually doing this right now as I'm recording. I'm going to take this, and I'm going to paste this progression, this series of reactions into my episode show notes here for you, so that you can actually read that while you're listening. The bottom line here is D-ribose supplementally enters the process in that the pentose phosphate shunt process in that last step, that fourth step. The point of this is, by taking supplemental D-ribose, you bypass rate-limiting reactions in the body. Rate-limiting reactions in the body are reactions that are designed to control the amount of product. Okay? So, for example, a rate-limiting step in producing a car would be producing the engine. If you don't have engines to put in the chassis, you can't create a car. So you could say that in the process of building a car, the building of the engine by a separate entity is a rate-limiting step. The body works very much the same way. Once you run into the rate limit of a reaction, you cannot perform anymore. This is why, in this case, D-ribose is an excellent supplemental source of this phosphoribosyl pyrophosphate. How does it help? That's a lot of science for you. I know that. How does it help you? Well, D-ribose actually supplies the raw materials to that salvage pathway we talked about. A little bit more science here. PRPP becomes inosine monophosphate, with which an adenine and a hypoxanthine creates adenosine monophosphate, AMP. Okay, so when your body is significantly depleted of energy, of ATP, your body has a couple of ways to create more. It can go into this adenine nucleotide pool. It can assemble a PRPP into an inosine monophosphate, an IMP, with an adenine and a hypoxanthine molecule to create AMP. Now, it can combine AMPs to make ADP. You can combine two ADPs to make an ATP and an AMP. This sounds very, very familiar for those of you who've listened to my discussions about high-intensity training. For those of you who've listened to my discussions about high-intensity training, we talk about the AMP kinase pathway, the AMPK pathway. That is a major driver of physiological adaptation to exercise, especially when it's high-intensity exercise and AMP, adenosine monophosphate, is in high quantities in the cell. All right. As you recall, high-intensity interval exercise stimulates this pathway, which stimulates mitochondrial biogenesis. It stimulates enzymatic adaptation. It stimulates other physiological adaptations, such as increased capillary density, etc., etc. Okay, this goes right back and ties right back into high-intensity interval training, of which something I have advocated for a long, long time. Why D-ribose is cool is it helps to really, really resynthesize ATP very, very quickly, okay? And it also, physiologically, whether or not this is beneficial in real-world terms or not, that's, again, an N equals 1 experiment that you need to perform. Supplementation of D-ribose actually helps to rebuild ATP very quickly, okay? The biochemistry is there that says supplementation of 2 to 4 grams per day may significantly improve the speed at which your body rebuilds energy in the cell, rebuilds ATP in each cell. The biochemistry is there. A small number of studies on it have been very inconclusive, and you can look those up if you so desire. I've got a few of them. I just have to find them on my hard drive. Interestingly enough, this stuff is very, very cool. It's a sugar. It's slightly sweet. It can go into a protein shake. It can go into anything. Interestingly enough, along with the next thing I'm going to talk about very quickly here, and this is something that's known very often from weightlifting circles, it can be, in theory, doubly effective. But D-ribose, it does get a little bit pricey, and it's not something I would typically use every day, although they suggest that you can do 2 to 4 grams per day. I typically only use it as a recovery tool, so specifically immediately following recovery. The idea being, if I want to work out hard the next day, I'm using any opportunity I can to re-energize my cellular energy stores as much as possible. again, to boost the effectiveness of this D-ribo supplement, you can do something that has been used by weightlifters for years, and that is creatine phosphate. Creatine phosphate, creatine monohydrate, however you want to do it. I typically use bulk supplements, creatine monohydrate. Creatine provides extra raw inorganic phosphates to help build ADP and ATP. If you break down the name, adenosine monophosphate, adenosine diphosphate, adenosine triphosphate, there's a phosphate molecule attached in a high energy bond to those molecules. It just so happens that the D-ribose, the 5-carbon sugar, which becomes that PRPP, essentially becomes the backbone of an ATP molecule. If you supply inorganic phosphates, which your body can break down and use, and attach to that backbone, you're providing all of the raw materials to create energy molecules, to create ATP. That's why the supplemental D-ribose biochemically has all the potential in the world to help improve your recovery. Is it going to work for everybody? I can't guarantee that. No, I cannot guarantee that. However, I do encourage you to try. Try adding it, perform an N equals one experiment on yourself, and see if you notice any improvement in recovery. All right, it's worth a shot. So that's D-ribose. Very, very cool stuff. Stuff that is sort of on the cutting edge of research right now, and stuff that is a very interesting addition to your recovery, routine. Next up is magnesium, and magnesium is something that is very interesting. Magnesium chemically, and I'm not talking necessarily about just taking the magnesium in a multivitamin. Magnesium biochemically helps to regulate the most important enzymes in the glycolytic process. So those of you who are sprinters, those of you who are doing a lot of weightlifting or a lot of high intensity exercise, and presuming that you are listening to my podcast, you typically are doing a fair amount of high intensity exercise. You're doing a lot of glycolytic type activity, activities which rely on the breakdown of sugars for quick energy. All right, that's sprinting, that's weightlifting, that's high intensity exercise. We talked about previously using fat as a primary fuel and using fat as a fuel further into your red zone, but everybody will have some time where they're going to need to do high intensity work, especially if you're doing late build phase or peak phase work. You're going to be doing a lot of glycolytic based activity. Magnesium is a cofactor and regulates the most important of the glycolytic enzymes, the hexokinase, the phosphofructokinase, the aldolase, phosphoglycerate kinase, and pyruvate kinase. These are absolutely necessary in order to perform glycolysis. And glycolysis, if you refer to my biohacking your energy systems, just simply the breakdown of a glucose molecule into pyruvate, which can, into pyruvate, which can either enter the Krebs cycle or enter lactic acid fermentation in the case of a lack of oxygen. Magnesium itself is actually a cofactor in the pyruvate dehydrogenase complex. And this is essential to converting pyruvate into acetyl-CoA. So if you remember, acetyl-CoA goes into the Krebs cycle, the citric acid cycle. If you don't get pyruvate broken down into acetyl-CoAs, it ends up going through lactate fermentation, and you end up with lactic acid, you end up with excessive hydrogen ion overload, and that's typically what happens when you overload your aerobic system. You can refer to my biohacking lactic acid for some of that information. Magnesium is a cofactor in NAD plus dependent isocitrate dehydrogenase. That is a citric acid cycle enzyme. It converts isocitrate into alpha-ketoglutarate, which is a rate-limiting step in the citric acid cycle. It splits off electrons via NADH, which heads to the electron transport chain, and that creates a significant amount of ATP in aerobic metabolism. Magnesium, bonds to adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, in the cell, and it's absolutely necessary to create the biologically active variety of ATP. And that's what can be used for producing energy. Mostly that we essentially call ATP as ATP. Biologically active ATP is magnesium ATP in all truthfulness. So magnesium is it's absolutely an essential mineral. So how do we use magnesium for recovery? Well, I just pop a magnesium tab. Well, yeah, yes and no. It's worth noting that magnesium magnesium tablets, for example, magnesium lactate, I believe it is what I take. I have to look at my bottle, or you can look at my online store for that matter. Magnesium tablets, I actually use ZMA, which is a brand name of that, now that I think about it. Magnesium is actually shown to improve sleep quality and create a sleepy sort of condition. It's designed to sort of calm the body a little bit. So it's actually very valuable as a recovery tool in that respect. In a respect of muscular soreness, if you look on my Amazon page, you will find, I believe it's called Essential or Natural Minerals Magnesium Lotion. Magnesium lotion is kind of interesting. This basically relies on the concept where you can put something on the body itself, on the skin. It will be absorbed through the skin into the tissues below. By rubbing a magnesium-rich oil or lotion on the skin, magnesium will be absorbed through the skin into the underlying muscle tissue, and that magnesium will be made available to varieties of body processes, including the adenine nucleotide scavenging we talked about previously, including all of the citric acid cycle enzymes that we talked about, including all of the glycolytic enzymes we talked about previously. That's all very important. It's a very important use of magnesium. It's a great way to do it. Anecdotally, I can tell you, throwing magnesium oil on my muscles after lifting significantly cuts down on the post-exercise soreness. The same with riding heavy, hard intervals. Again, it's only anecdotal. It's an N equals one experiment. However, I recommend, if you're looking for that little bit of an edge, give it a look. It's not expensive. Again, you can find it on my Amazon store. Click through and you'll find it. Give it a shot and see what happens. Biochemically and physiologically, the mechanisms are there. Research is out there definitely for this. Okay, so if you really want to take a look at it, you can look it up. Last one I'm going to go through here, zinc. Zinc is a very interesting molecule. Zinc is not maybe what you would consider the traditional recovery supplement. Zinc is essentially biochemically required for the transcription of RNA and the metabolism or creation of DNA. That means any gene expression that exercise is going to push, you're going to have an RNA transcriptor, and you're very likely going to need additional DNA as you build further myonuclei in a muscle fiber. It's absolutely required for that. Without zinc, you cannot transcript parts of a gene via RNA, and you cannot create new DNA, so you cannot create more muscle tissue. It's also a regulator of apoptosis in the cellular environment. So if a cell is damaged or a cellular organelle is damaged during the process of creating energy, it regulates the ability for your body to recognize and destroy that damaged machinery before it can become an issue. It is absolutely very neurologically important for proper nervous function. It is a synaptic neurotransmitter cofactor in glutamatergic neurons, which are excitatory in nature. It's also a GABA precursor, gamma amyl, gamma aminobutyric acid precursor, which is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. So those are both very active during training stimulus. They're also very active during recovery stimulus, especially in sleep, as GABA is typically found. It's a significant cofactor in immune function regulation. And obviously, if you are increasing your exercise duress, most of you have experienced this. You increase the amount of exercise, the amount of training you're doing, suddenly you get sick. It knocks you back a few weeks. That's because it's your body trying to protect itself, essentially. Zinc supplementation has been shown to really help in that. Increases the immune function, and of course, no sickness under exercise duress means better maintenance of the exercise and physical gains that you are getting. Interestingly here, now this is where we get off the beaten path a little bit, zinc citrate specifically is an aromatase inhibitor. Aromatase is a chemical which converts testosterone into estrogen. And I'm particularly speaking to the guys out there, although girls, you could be listening as well. Increased testosterone equals increased capacity for recovery. It also relates to an increase in not only muscle mass, but muscle fiber strength production. Okay. Remember Floyd Landis got busted and stripped of his 2006 Tour de France victory because he was taking testosterone. Why was he doing that? He was doing that so he could recover quicker. A single zinc citrate, about a 50 milligram dose, will act as an effective aromatase inhibitor, a very natural one. Aromatase inhibitors will allow any testosterone that is free in the blood and unbound to not be converted into estrogens. Estrogens and estrogenergic types of compounds are everywhere in our society today. Bisphenol A, for example, is a phytoestrogen. There are phytoestrogens in soy and things like that. There's a lot of soy in products that we eat today. So zinc citrate not only will help protect you from a nutritional standpoint from the phytoestrogens in your food and from your environment, it will also basically regulate the natural aromatase chemistry in your body, provide more free testosterone, and of course provide you better recovery, and of course increased muscle mass. And there is plenty of research on this as well. I'll be honest, folks, my brain's a little bit tired after that. That's some really, really tough scientific stuff going on here. But to sum it up for you, D-ribose supplement, really, really good at helping to re-energize cellular energy, helping to rebuild ATP molecules in the cell. And it's also very, very good at helping your cells individually recover much quicker from hard exercise. Magnesium is very, very important, again, for recovering ATP in the cell. It's also very important for putting metabolites back in the cell, glucose, things like that. It's also very important in actually activating the machinery which helps your body become efficient in processing fuel and turning it into energy. Zinc is a very important molecule, important supplement, especially zinc citrate, because it's not only a neurotransmitter cofactor, it's not only a precursor for some neurotransmitters, but it also improves your immune function and acts as a testosterone booster through inhibiting the conversion of testosterone to estrogen. That's why these three things, and of course creatine along the way, another major player in ATP production, creatine, D-ribose, magnesium, zinc, four little recovery nutritional tricks for you to consider adding to recovery routine. In terms of nutrition, and in terms of biochemistry of nutrition, of recovery, remember that recovery is sort of a double-edged sword. The goal of recovery from a chemical nature is to get all that glucose back into your cells as quickly as possible without putting any into fat. The idea of recovery is also a high glycemic index type. Recovery fuel is excellent. It spikes insulin. Insulin gets all that sugar back into your cells and back into your liver very quickly so that you can start repairing the damage you've done during your exercise sessions. And again, that's why all of these supplements are beneficial to that process. So consider taking a look at those supplements up on the Tailwind Coaching Amazon store under my sponsors there. If you have any questions, and I'm sure some of you will, about D-ribose, about magnesium, about creatine, about zinc, about any of the recovery techniques I talked about, always, always, always feel free to shoot them across to the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, shoot them to my email address, coachrobdc@gmail.com, and I can always answer those for you. Or find me on Twitter and tweet at coachrobdc and see what you get back on that, what I can answer in 140 characters. So, that being said, that's going to bring a close to the 50th edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, the Recovery Podcast, or the Recover Like a Pro Tips and Tricks edition. I want to thank sincerely all of you for listening these last 50 episodes. It's been probably 50 some odd hours of ridiculous entertainment and information. And I'm looking forward to providing you another 50 hours of very similar entertainment. Again, I'm looking to diversify the podcast a little bit, possibly add a co-host. If you're interested in that, shoot me an email. If you have ideas for things that you'd like to see, I'm always looking for ideas for things to add to my next podcast and add to my list. And that's really about it, folks. Thank you again for listening. Keep the shiny side up. Keep the rubber side down. I'll be talking to you all real soon, and I'm looking forward to another long, long, long run of podcasts.